Good evening. The cop who shot Rayshard Brooks is charged with murder.
The utterance made by Officer Roth was, "I got it." That was the statement that was made at that time.
Mayor de Blasio announces new rules for the NYPD, and a shooter targets protesters in New Mexico. With these and other stories, I'm Paul DiRienzo with the news for Wednesday, June 17th, 2020. Prosecutors brought murder charges against the white Atlanta police officer who shot Rayshard Brooks in the back today. Fulton County District Attorney Paul Howard says Brooks posed no threat when he was gunned down, and he says the officer, Garrett Rolfe, made an incriminating statement over the body of the dying black man.
The utterance made by Officer Roth was, "I got it." That was the statement that was made at that time. We also noted that Officer Roth was firing a taser at Mr. Brooks. The City of Atlanta SOPs, in fact, prohibit officers from firing tasers at someone who is running away. So the City of Atlanta says you cannot even fire a taser at someone who is running away. So you certainly can't fire a gun, a handgun, at someone who is running away.
And that's DA Paul Howard. Brooks was holding a stun gun he had snatched from officers but was 18 feet 3 inches away when he was shot and was running away at the time. The shooting occurred 5 days outside a Wendy's restaurant that was burned down afterwards. The felony murder charge against Rolfe carries a life prison sentence without parole or the death penalty. The district attorney says the other officer involved in the shooting, Devin Brosnan, has decided to come forward to help prosecutors. Howard says it's the first time an Atlanta cop has agreed to turn evidence against a fellow officer.
Officer Brosnan has now become a state's witness. He has decided to testify on behalf of the state in this case. What he has said to us, that is, within a matter of days, he plans to make a statement regarding the culpability of Officer Roth. But he indicated that he is not psychologically willing to give that statement today. Officer Brosnan, however, has admitted that he was, in fact, standing on Mr. Brooks's body immediately after the shooting.
District Attorney Howard went on to list the 11 charges against Rolfe and 3 charges against Brosnan.
These are the 11 charges against Officer Rolfe. The first charge is felony murder. This is the death that is as a result of a underlying felony. And in this case, the underlying felony is aggravated assault with a deadly weapon. And the possible sentences for a felony murder conviction would be life, life without parole, or the death penalty. Now, he's also charged in the arrest warrant with aggravated assault with a deadly weapon. This is a count charging him for the shooting of Mr. Brooks, and the possible sentence for aggravated assault is 1 to 20 years. The third aggravated assault account is for the shooting towards or in the direction of Mr. Melvin Evans. Mr. Evans was the person who was seated in the car. And if you would point out, this automobile is the place that Mr. Evans and his two companions were driving, and a shot was fired. So with count 4 against Officer Roth, it charges him with aggravated assault for firing the weapon in or in the direction of Danielle Killians, who was in the passenger side of the front seat of the car. Count 5 is an aggravated assault charge. And this was a charge for shooting towards or in the direction of Michael Perkins. Mr. Perkins was seated in the rear of this same vehicle at that time. There's a charge for criminal damage for shooting into that vehicle. Also, Officer Roth is charged with 7 violations of office. Each one of those carries a 1 to 5 sentence. These are violations of his oath of office for the city of Atlanta, arresting Mr. Brooks for the DUI without immediately informing him of the arrest, shooting a taser at Mr. Brooks while he was running away, which again is a violation of Atlanta's own SOP. Thirdly, excessive force when shooting a firearm at Mr. Brooks. And number four is the failure to render timely medical aid. Those are the four violations of oath. The eighth is for kicking Mr. Brooks, and the possible sentence for kicking Mr. Brooks is from 1 to 20 years. And these are the charges for Officer Brosnan, and they're a total of 3 charges. And the first charge is for aggravated assault, and this is for standing or stepping on Mr. Brooks's shoulder. The possible sentence for this crime is 1 to 20 years. And this is a photograph of Officer Brosnan, who you can see to the right. And at the time of the photograph, he is standing on the body of Mr. Brooks. And as I've indicated earlier in our conversations with Officer Brosnan, he has admitted that he stood on the body of Mr. Brooks. He said he believes that he was standing on Mr. Brooks's arm, but that is what the photograph shows. Because Officer Brosnan is now becoming a cooperating witness for the state, we are asking the court to grant a bond of $50,000. As I indicated, that he would become one of the first police officers to actually indicate that he is willing to testify against someone in his own department. As for Officer Roth, the person who fired the 2 bullets, we're recommending no bond for Officer Roth.
Howard says it's unusual to take out an arrest warrant before a grand jury indictment. He says that's because of a court backlog, and it would take until next year for a grand jury to meet. Atlanta Police Chief Erica Shields resigned less than 24 hours after Brooks died. The news came as Republicans on Capitol Hill unveiled a package of police reform measures, and as the movement to get rid of Confederate monuments and other racially offensive symbols reached America's breakfast table, the maker of Aunt Jemima syrup and pancake mix announced today it was dropping the offensive 131-year-old brand. Rayshard Brooks was killed after police were called to the restaurant over complaints of a car blocking the drive-through lane. An officer found Brooks asleep behind the wheel, and a breath test showed he was intoxicated. D.A. Howard says Brooks was only mildly inebriated. After an apparently calm 40-minute conversation where Brooks showed he was not armed and offered to go to nearby relatives' house, the encounter turned violent. Brooks wrestled with Rolfe and was more than 18 feet away when he was shot twice in the back. D.A. Howard says Rolfe knew the taser aimed at the officer by Brooks had already been fired and was not a threat. Meanwhile, in New York City, facing its own allegations of police violence, Mayor Bill de Blasio used his daily COVID-19 news conference to announce a number of reforms he's ordered for the NYPD.
We are releasing all audio and video from body-worn cameras worn by police officers in key moments, key instances. That will be released as a matter of course going forward. When people don't think there's going to be justice, how is there going to be trust? So we have to restore trust, and the best way to restore trust is to show that the accountability is there, that the internal disciplinary process of the NYPD will be fast, will be fair, will be transparent. When you believe that the process is actually about justice, it opens up the pathways of trust and communication. Now, we know for too long within the NYPD, even when justice was served, it took a very, very long time, and that corroded trust in and of itself. The Internal Affairs Bureau, charged with rooting out misdeeds of all kinds, is given by law and by policy, months and months to do investigations, years for any internal judicial process. And every day that passes, the people who felt victimized feel more and more pained because it doesn't feel like justice is coming. It doesn't feel like there's an honest process. It causes a deeper loss of faith. It causes more frustration, more anger. The very process that's supposed to bring justice, in many cases, has made the situation worse. And this has been particularly true when someone got hurt, when someone got killed. Any time where an individual, a civilian, was harmed, that's where people are watching especially. And they want to know there will be speedy justice. And I mean justice, which means following the facts wherever they may lead. Sometimes those facts show that officers did exactly the right thing. Sometimes it shows they did not, or any point in between. But it has to be a process that people can see openly and that moves speedily and that people have faith in because they see results. Everything comes down to consequences and results. When they actually exist, people start to have faith again. Today, I'm announcing two major changes for the justice system within the NYPD involving any case where there's substantial injury to a civilian. First, on the immediate decision in any such case of whether an officer will be modified, meaning that their badge and gun will be taken away, or suspended fully, that decision in cases where there's substantial injury to a civilian, that decision will be made by the police commissioner within 48 hours. I will note that, of course, there will be exceptional situations when, for example, a district attorney gets involved or there are other very particular dynamics that might cause more time. But the standard will be 48 hours for that initial decision. And then the standard for the Internal Affairs Bureau will be to finish its full investigation for immediate decisions about the disciplinary process in 2 weeks or less. People deserve to know that if an officer has done something wrong, that the action involving their immediate status is very quick, and that the decision about whether there will be further disciplinary action happens in a meaningful time frame. Internal Affairs Bureau will be given 2 weeks to come to that initial decision on what needs to happen next with a judicial proceeding.
Mayor Bill de Blasio. And tomorrow, the New York City Council votes on a series of new laws meant to reform the practices of the NYPD. One of the laws is named the Public Oversight of Surveillance Technology, or POST Act. Supporters of the law say the NYPD has built up an arsenal of cutting-edge military-grade spy tools without any public notice, debate, or oversight. The purpose of the POST Act is to bring more civilian review to the cops' use of the new surveillance technologies. In answer to a question from WBAI's Jillian Jonas, the mayor says he's ready to sign the bill when it passes.
I appreciate the question. I've looked at it carefully, and as I think I said to you, my concern was to balance transparency with our ability to deal with profound safety concerns, including terrorism, which unfortunately still is a part of our lives. But I am convinced that the wording of the act is appropriate, is balanced, so I'm comfortable supporting it.
An attorney with the Liberty and National Security Program, the Brennan Center, is Angel Diaz. He says the bill is long overdue.
The bill is called the Public Oversight of Surveillance Technology Act, or the POST Act for short. And it essentially would require the NYPD to make basic disclosures about which surveillance tools they have and what policies they have in place to protect the privacy and civil rights of New Yorkers.
Why is that important?
Increasingly, the NYPD engages in policing using surveillance tools that are not understood and are not accountable to anybody, including the city council or the public. We've seen that technology such as facial recognition can't reliably identify faces that are non-white. And we also have seen issues around, for example, the NYPD's gang database, which has thousands and thousands of names, over 95% of which are people of color.
What kind of technology are we talking about?
Some of these technologies are military-grade technologies that were developed for use in war zones but have made their way back to New York City. For example, Stingray technology is a tool that pretends to be a cell phone and tricks everyone around every phone in the vicinity of the technology to connect to the device instead of a cell phone tower. And that provides a lot of identified information and potentially even the context of text conversations.
Have there been examples of this being misused in New York yet?
One of the big problems that the POST Act tries to solve is that it would require the police department to make disclosures before they start using the technology, whereas what we have right now is usually we have news reports that uncover misuses of technology afterwards. So, for example, we have found through public records requests that the NYPD misuses its facial recognition technology when it doesn't have a good photo of a suspect. And this, instead, what they've done is they've selected a picture of a celebrity that they think resembled the suspect and ran that photo through facial recognition. So even if the technology were to improve, that kind of misuse shows the real need for oversight and accountability.
Is that something that's legal?
That's actually a good question. Right now, there are not a lot of rules and regulations that govern the use of facial recognition technology. The POST Act is essentially a first step. It's a floor, not a ceiling, in terms of the rules that need to be put in place over these new emerging technologies.
When does the city council vote on this?
The vote is tomorrow at 1:30 p.m. They will be voting on a number of NYPD reform bills, one of which is the POST Act.
Is it expected to pass?
Yes. Right now, thanks to a lot of outreach and work from people on the ground and at protests, the bill has a veto-proof majority of the city council. I think it includes 37 co-sponsors plus the public advocate. And the mayor has told at least one reporter that he intends to sign it if it passes.
That's our reporter, Jillian, from WBAI. Yeah. Why did it take so long?
Oftentimes, we've come to a place where police departments have opposed basic oversight and have usually invoked national security threats or said that it's going to put people at risk without providing any sort of evidence of that being the case. And we are in a moment where New Yorkers across the city have come together and taken to the streets and demanded more accountability of their police departments and more meaningful oversight. The POST Act is one small part of that overall movement.
Fear of terrorism. Is New York going to be put in danger from terrorists because of this?
Absolutely not. The POST Act only requires that the NYPD make basic disclosures about the tools that it has, not around the operational details. To give you just one example, you and I, everyone understands what a wiretap is. They understand that the police listen in on phone conversations and that there are rules in place, but that doesn't mean that the technology isn't useful and that doesn't continue to be used today for criminal investigations.
Angel Diaz is an attorney with the Liberty and National Security Program of the Brennan Center. And you're listening to the news on WBAI New York. I'm Paul DiRienzo. Last Saturday, a 19-year-old Black Lives Matter protester was found dead in Tallahassee, Florida. The activist Oluwatoyin Salau was one of two women whose bodies were discovered southeast of the city. The other victim was identified as Victoria Sims, 75. A 49-year-old man identified as Aaron Glee Jr. has been charged with murder and kidnapping in connection with their deaths. Those deaths join reports of four black people found hanging in the past month around the United States. While the gruesome deaths have been ruled suicide, they've been raising suspicions amid the Black Lives Matter protests sweeping the world. The FBI says it'll monitor the investigations into these deaths. In one case in Los Angeles, the medical examiner withdrew a suicide determination of 24-year-old Robert Fuller, found hanging in June. A day before Fuller was found, Dominique Alexander, 27, was discovered in the same manner in Fort Tyrone Park in Upper Manhattan, also ruled a suicide. Fuller's family has insisted that he wasn't suicidal, and days before he died, he attended a Black Lives Matter protest. Meanwhile, at least one protester was shot by an apparent counter-protester as a group of Native American activists attempted to pull down a statue of slave trading conquistador Juan de Oñate in Albuquerque, New Mexico. The shooter was later arrested. He's a former city council candidate named Stephen Ray Baca. He's facing charges including aggravated battery that would likely result in death or great bodily harm. He's also charged with carrying a semi-automatic pistol. The victim, Scott Williams, is in critical condition, but expected to survive. The altercation was caught on cell phone video.
Stop!
An author and expert on New Mexico colonial history is Roxanne Dunbar Ortiz. She says the struggle to pull down the statue called La Jornada has been going on for years and marks a longstanding conflict between Native people and descendants of early colonists called Hispanos.
The Red Nation people who had organized the protest to take down the Oñate statue, they had taken another one down in northern New Mexico during the day, and they came for that one. They're a very peaceful group. They're very militant, but they certainly are very well-organized Native group. They've continually had these militia people from Hispano town of Española come and harass them at their demonstrations during the past 3 weeks. And they have a partnership with Black Lives Matter, so they've been protesting together since the last few days. They've been demanding the downing of the colonizers' monument. This is a long time in coming, but it's not the first time. There are constant protests against it. It's a revival. They've never been able to get the authorities to take it down. They're state-sponsored. They're not private ones. And Hispanos, who are the settler colonialist descendants of the Spanish conquerors, who were given huge land grants, much of which they lost when the United States took over by legalistic means. They have a land grant movement to take land back, but it was land taken away from the Pueblo Indians that was given to them. It's not really legitimate land claim. They are a force, and they control the police forces, the sheriff, the court system, the legislature, and all local offices now. And they call themselves Hispanos, not Hispanics, certainly not Mexicans. They hate Mexicans. This was not just a rogue guy who did this. He's from the Baca family. His father's a sheriff. And the police were really in cahoots with the violence there, and they have been. The Albuquerque police force is a colonial police force. This guy was no outlier. He's part of the elite of New Mexico, the Baca family.
So what did this guy do?
He shot into the group of protesters and shot several times, and two people were down and are in the hospital with injuries. He's been charged with aggravated assault and not with a deadly weapon. He'll get off. The jurors, everyone will be Hispano, and he'll get off just scot-free. With that low level, that's practically not even a sentence, aggravated assault instead of attempted murder. This is a colonial situation in New Mexico.
Yeah.
It's a unique place in the United States in that sense, and very few people know the demography and the history and the dynamic of the place, but it's a very dangerous place for Native people.
Despite the fact that so many Native people live in New Mexico.
Exactly. Well, because of that.
I get it.
Because of that.
Let me ask you who this fellow was, the statue was of Oñate, you said?
Oñate, Don Juan de Oñate. He was a Basque, son of colonizers who colonized Chihuahua, the state of Chihuahua in the north. And his father was a slave trader and slave owner of African slaves and Indian slaves, and funded the colonizing mission. They were all done by private funds, and they had to get permission from the monarch to do it. So it was a corporate affair and a capitalist affair. They also got the bounty, and they had to give a percentage to the monarchy in Spain and keep the rest. Within 10 years of their entry, the 98 city-states of the Pueblo Indians, who had been there for tens of thousands of years, they're not armed, involved in wars, they destroyed 98 of these city-states along the Rio Grande River. So they're very strong people. They had to accept that Indian status that the United States invented in the 19th century, colonial status, in order to have any kind of rights or protection.
What'll come of this? Are these statues coming down for good in New Mexico, and what does that mean?
Yes. Well, they took the one down in the north yesterday, and they said that the state ordered the one at the museum in Albuquerque to be taken down. But there was this man willing to kill to keep a slave-owning colonizer statue up. Very interesting. And he's defended by the Hispanos there. He's not a lone person. He's a part of a problem there.
Roxanne Dunbar Ortiz is an author and expert on New Mexico colonial history. A civilian armed militia group known as the New Mexico Civil Guard attended the protest Monday in an attempt to protect the statue, but took to Facebook to claim Baca was not a member of their group. But several witnesses say the Civil Guard had been harassing them prior to the shooting. According to the mayor, the statue was removed Tuesday and will remain in storage until further notice. And that's some of the news for Wednesday, June 17, 2020. The news was produced with Linda Perry and Jillian Jonas. Our engineer is Reggie Johnson. For the WBAI News, I'm Paul DiRienzo.